Welcome to another brand new episode of your favorite podcast on the entire planet, Drama with Connor and Dylan. And today is another incredible chat with Henry Gottfried from this season's revival of Cabaret at the Kit Kat Club. And you're going to love this conversation. It's so fun. There's also other fun conversations happening on our Patreon, which is our bonus content platform, which we lovingly call Drama Plus, where for $5 a month, you get access to bonus episodes of Drama and access to our close friends on Instagram, where we share lots and lots of, let's just say, exclusive content. It feels like you're at the Kit Kat Club when you're in our close friends. You know, you disappear into a world where life is beautiful. Wow. I'm proud of myself for that one. Anyway, go to patreon.com/thedramapodcast, spend $5 to become a Drama Plus member, and enjoy this episode with Henry. We love you. Mwah.
Press play.
Curtain up an hour in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet.
Did they book?
Who got nom?
The option, no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, we have to talk about the Tortured Poets Department.
I know. And, you know, we resisted for so long talking about it.
Resisted. We have not talked about it on the Patreon. Okay. Plugged for Drama Plus. But also, we recorded like three or four episodes already in the last like 2 weeks since TTPD has been released.
That's right.
And I think I'm finally ready to admit my true feelings about the album. Are you?
I'm ready. You know, I was with you in New York when it came out. It was the day we recorded with Brian Darcy James. We had a lot of things going on.
Day after seeing Cabaret.
There was just so much in the ether, and you and I weren't able to fully dive into this 31 song tome of a work that Taylor released. And I will say, you and I are Swifties, but we're not crazy, right?
Well, crazy about the music, but right. You know, I'm not like obsessed with her life and stuff, but
right.
What do you think? You've had a few weeks.
I have to admit, I did not love it at first. I was kind of like, it feels like more of the same. But then I remembered art isn't easy and you kind of have to like let it sink in. And I found myself like really getting into it and actually just listening to it and not needing to form an opinion right away. And I actually really love it now. I think it's better than Midnight's.
Agreed.
I think there's some incredible singles. I do think that some of the songs on the anthology, which is like the second half that she released, they kind of blur together. I think,
agree.
A little bit for me.
But it's meant to be bonus, right? Like it's meant to be a bonus album. I know, but when I put together like my faves from the standard edition and then from the anthology, aka the second album she dropped, I've got like a dozen songs that would be an amazing
There you
album.
Go.
You know what I mean? I mean, I'm obsessed with like Guilty as Sin, which I think is a top tier Taylor.
One of her best.
Right? It's so good. It's got mm-hmm. everything you want from like a Taylor song. An amazing chorus that just has this hook that's insane. And the final line of the song, haunting, the way it calls back to the rest of the lyrics. I mean, she does know how to do it.
Yeah.
She does know how to do it.
Well, of course, So Long London. You know, I know that one's important to you. And
right.
Who's Daddy, I love him. There's so many good ones.
I know. So. Okay, we could keep going on and on. But I think I'm ready to say, I understand why she released this album. Like, and I'm never going to complain about one of my favorite artists coming out with 30 songs in 1 year. Maybe 31. But
totally.
I know I was hard on it at first. And I think a lot of reviewers were too, but she's such a great songwriter. So like, if you let it sink in, I think people will appreciate the
album. Who cares what reviews say? You know, even with everything on Broadway this season, it's truly just like, if you like something, love it. Who gives a shit? Like, form your own viewpoint. And, you know, Taylor wrote when she released this album, she posted, you know, once we've spoken our saddest story, we can be free of it.
Oh my.
And then all that's left behind is the tortured poetry. I think that in that way, like, art is sort of telling your story, letting something leave your body and then giving it to the world. And so I think that that is where this album kind of sits with me, is like, I'm not trying to like place it on her life experiences. I'm not necessarily trying to place it on mine. I'm just like, just experiencing it and loving it. You know,
I love that. That's really great.
Yeah.
I think people need to give another chance.
Totally.
Dylan, I'm so excited because I mentioned this album dropped the day after we saw Cabaret on Broadway,
yes.
The Kit Kat Club.
That's right.
August Wilson Theater. I'm so excited. And I'm so excited that this guest is doing our show because
I know.
One of my favorite performances in the show, anytime he's on stage, he pops and you are dropped in. I cannot wait to talk to him. And we've already been hitting it off.
impeccable accent work, I have to say.
I mean, come on. But I'm going to do the bio today. Well, that you wrote, but you know. So y'all, our guest today is currently appearing in the Broadway revival of Cabaret at the Kit Kat Club as Ernst Ludwig. Before his delicious and devilish turn at the August Wilson Theater, he made his Broadway debut in the original cast of Waitress, later playing the role of Dr. Pomatter, and even appearing in the filmed version. He toured the nation in Pippin, as well as played Billy in the Bright Star Tour. He also appeared in the world premiere of The Devil Wears Prada, and was in the company of Peter Pan Live, and appeared on television in Dear Edward and Glee. As a director, he's developed new work at Ojai Playwrights Conference, Hedgebrook Playwrights Festival, and Vineyard Arts Project, and assistant directed for both Broadway and Off-Broadway, including A Christmas Carol, starring Jefferson Mays, as well as more projects with Michael Arden and friend of drama, Jeff Calhoun. He's a brilliant, multifaceted artist, and we're so gagged to have him on the podcast today. Please welcome to drama, Henry Godfrey.
Thank you so much. Hi, guys.
Hi, Henry.
I have to say, when I logged into the Zoom is just called Drama with Henry Godfrey. I had an anxious response to seeing that. Like, who had beef?
What's called the principal's office in that moment.
Welcome to Drama, Henry. Are you well?
I'm really well. You know, first of all, it's 80 degrees in New York today. It's hard to argue with that. And I just spent a little bit of time in the park this morning. I live right by Prospect Park.
Ooh.
And I'm well. I'm really happy. I'm on the other side of the opening of Cabaret. And so now the dust gets to settle and we get to fall into a groove a little bit. And it feels good. It feels really good.
Good. I'm so glad.
It's an amazing show. Connor and I had the time of our lives. We got to go. It was actually the night of Mimi Scardula's birthday and engagement that all we didn't was occurring, but it's just electric. The whole experience is phenomenal. We'll get into Cabaret and everything. I'm kind of curious though. Are you a Taylor person at all?
Oh my gosh. I'm nervous to say that I'm not, because I don't want to be hunted on the internet.
The Zoom ends, lights cut out, the interview's over.
Yeah, exactly.
We lose the audio.
Someone knocks on my door immediately. But I do want to say, to cover my ass, that I was an early adopter, like in the Fearless era, because I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. So when she was still like sort of a country crossover girl, I was in high school. It was all of a piece.
Bluebird Cafe vibes.
Thank you. Shout out. So I'm not a hater. I just fell off the train at a certain point, like really. And that train moves so quickly and is so enormous that like, I think at a certain point I saw the train in the distance and I was like, I can't catch up to that train ever. So I don't know. At some point, the train will probably make a stop for me and I'll get back on.
You might meet a friend on the train, like Cliff meets Ernst.
And there you go.
You never know.
Wow, Dylan, you really are staying on theme with Cabaret.
You know, it's in my brain. I've been thinking a lot about Cabaret and how I think it is like one of the greatest musicals of all time. And
I couldn't agree more.
It's a long first act, but it doesn't feel that way until you look at your phone at intermission and you're like, oh my God, like it's almost been
quarter to 10. I'm normally in my pajamas by now, but
yeah,
but it's so well greased and everything works.
I totally agree. It is a long show and this production like is a long experience because there's that whole amazing prologue and there are certain things in the show that in the scripted show, even that take their time in a really beautiful way, but I don't think it feels long. It feels so densely packed and it's like high highs and low lows. And I just think it's like unbeatable, like as far as like musicals in the pantheon of like the great musicals. Yeah,
absolutely. They don't write them like that anymore, but I'm sure that one day people will look back on the things that are new and coming out now and they'll say the same thing. But
yeah,
it works so well. I have so many questions just about the process and the experience and everything. I would love to start with Cabaret.
Oh yeah, let's do it. I mean, like I said, we're obsessed with you in the show. Like you truly are, like I said, you pop when you're on screen. Like I was so dropped in your
scenes.
On screen. On stage.
So a friend of mine who's not a theater person saw the show from the rear mezzanine and I was asking like, how's the view? And they were like, oh, it looks so good. Like you can see these patterns on stage. It really looks really beautiful from up there. But you know what they should do? They should have screens and then you can see everyone's faces close up. I was like, not in this show. Yeah.
If Jamie Lloyd directed it, you know?
Right.
But I feel like it, the role itself is just perfect for you. You really win Cliff and the audience over in such a way that it's so impactful. Congrats on a beautiful performance and amazing production.
Thank you. That's really nice of you to say. I feel so lucky to get to do it. And it is a really fun part to get to do. It's like it's nice of you to say that I pop, because I certainly like pop in and out. And that's one of the like perks, but one of the tricky things about doing that part is that like, I'm there for 90 seconds and then I disappear for 35 minutes. And then I'm there for like 2.5 minutes and then I disappear for another 35 minutes. But it does feel like the character is important to the story. Like there are certain very important things that hinge on his presence. And
no spoilers, of course.
No spoilers. But even from the first scene, like that train scene you're talking about, like it sets up so much of what's to come, which is like, we understand that this is Cliff's first day. He's on his way into Berlin. He hasn't even made it into Berlin yet. And we're learning about like all of those circumstances. And it's this, you know, like it sets everything into motion. He meets this guy, chance meeting on the train. And this local guy says, oh my God, I know where you should stay. I know who you should meet. I know like where you should go out, and we're going to become friends. And like the rest of the play all follows from that scene. So it feels like a cool responsibility to the show, to the piece. Yeah.
Ernst becomes like a benefactor to Cliff in a way. He even gives him clients for his
totally. Yeah. And I think in Ernst's mind, like he is a really good friend to this guy. Like he really helps him out. They both need a buddy. They meet each other. It's so perfect. And then Ernst really helps him out. He gives him a place to stay. You know, he introduces him to the person who has a room for him to rent. And he gets him English lesson students and income. And then this other, you know, this other income that he helps him get. So I think like for Ernst, it's like, it's as positive as it is for Cliff. Like they really, how lucky that they found each other.
Which makes the shocking reveal at the end of the first act shocking. And I have to say, I've seen on Twitter, people are kind of mocking the gasps that will happen. And I just have to say, like, for some people, they might not understand the full context or understand things when they're, you know, they might be buying a ticket for Eddie Redmayne, you know, to see something.
Yes,
or,
totally.
The experience. So like, let's let everyone experience.
People on Twitter being bitchy. Oh, I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
I know. You know, I also feel like I have had moments doing the show, and especially in the early performances, before we had gotten our bearings of what the audience response was going to be like, I had a similar response where I was like, you must be joking, like gasping in this moment. Like you had to have known what was coming. Or have you never seen Cabaret before? Because I'm thrilled that people who have never seen Cabaret before get to see this show, but sort of like, didn't you know that there would be a plot? And then, you know, like, but I think it's a nice testament to how well built the play is and how well built the production is. Because I think even if you sort of know on some intellectual level what's happening, what's going to happen, the moment still kind of catches you off guard or disappoints you. It's sort of a gut punch. Even if you saw it coming or you were waiting for it to come, you still go, damn, I really hate that had to come. And that's like, it means that the thing is well constructed, you know, so that's a good feeling. I did Bright Star. You mentioned that I did Bright Star. And Bright Star, am I going to spoil the whole plot to say this? Or is it sort of, in my mind, I'm like, this is, you know, from the first scene, what the whole story is, and you're waiting to see how it plays out. It's like sort of Shakespearean in this way, where you understand that this woman who lost her baby at some point early in the show, turns out like years later, they've gotten to know each other in a different context and didn't realize they were mother and son. How beautiful. Yeah. And the play and the show sort of works that it like hints at that in the very first number. And then you go, okay, how are we going to see this play out? And doing Bright Star, I played that son character in that scene, like, you know, 5 minutes before the end of the show where they both finally recognize, oh my God, we're mother and son. And it's really emotional and overwhelming to them. Audiences would gasp. And I, same kind of thing. I would think, you must be joking. Like that. Right. It's sort of like, it's almost as if you were told when you walked in, this is what's going to happen. And then when it happened, you were like so caught off guard by it. But it's like, it means that people were on the ride. It's like, it's a nice thing. It means that people just like put their hands in the air and like, or on the roller coaster. And then the twist comes and they go, oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like, you know, an automatic standing ovation or applauding at the end of a song, like knowing the gasp is what builds in, or like the reaction. I don't know. Yeah, I think that's kind of cute. Gosh, you have two Bright Star stands here on the pod.
Love, so
we'll have to get into that eventually.
Love. Love, love, love.
How did Cabaret ultimately come into your life? This high profile revival, we've all been waiting years because it's been playing to sold out audiences on the West End for the last couple of years. But everyone was wondering who's going to be in the cast, what's going to happen. When did this come into your life?
Oh my God. Well, most of us who auditioned for the show got these jobs back in August of last year. The creative team from who are all British came over from London and had this like 2 week stretch of doing this, all this casting, like furiously packed into these couple weeks. So it all happened in this like really condensed time frame. Sometimes I feel like sometimes when you're auditioning for a show, it's really drawn out. You have like a first appointment, a few weeks later, you have a callback, and then maybe a month later a callback, and then it goes into hibernation, but then it comes back around where the, you know, whatever. And this was really condensed. So it was kind of a whirlwind. And all of a sudden, then I got the call saying, okay, you got the part. Hang tight, because the Candor and Ebb Estates have to approve everyone. It was this excruciating month of waiting, saying, I think I was just told that I got this really exciting, really big job, but I don't think I can tell anyone or count on it or like celebrate it. So it was a really, that part was odd, but the audition part itself was really quick, back to back to back callbacks, and then it was done, basically.
Wow. Holding that secret, I mean, I'm sure.
Did you tell anybody?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess it's being superstitious, but I'm also sort of like fatalistic or something. I have that thing where I am like, well, surely this is going to fall through. So if I say it, then it'll be embarrassing that I told people, and then people will be like, well, what about that job you said you were doing? And it's like, oh, they changed their minds. And, you know, like my first job that I ever got was Peter Pan Live. And it felt like it was a really big first job. Like, and I was way more green and inexperienced than I had any right to be to do that job. And I knew it. So I think I just like couldn't wrap my head around it. And they similarly did a funny thing where they said, okay, I had no agent at the time. Like I was just clueless. And they called me directly to say, great, you got the job. And, you know, start date TBD, because I was swinging. So they were like, rehearsals are going to start this day, but we don't know when we're going to bring the swings in. It might not be till the following week or 2 weeks later. So just hang tight. And then I didn't hear anything from them. And I had no agents to like interface through. So I was like really, really clueless. And I was so sure that it wasn't real, that they were going to call back and say, you know what, never mind, we actually don't need a swing for this, like we changed our mind, that I didn't even tell my then boyfriend, who was an actor. And he found out when one of his best friends, who was also in the show, got to rehearsal the first day, and there was like a face page of everyone in the cast. And this guy in the cast texted my ex and said, oh my god, I can't believe Henry's doing this show, you didn't tell me. And he was not happy.
Yeah. Oh my god.
And now you're like, and that was the beginning of the end.
That was in fact the beginning of the end. Yeah.
Not to jump around too much, but how did you book Peter Pan Live without, it was your first job. Did you just open audition, go for it?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, I moved to New York after college, no showcase, no agent, no, I wasn't in the union. I was like really kind of, I knew what I didn't know. I knew that I was working at a slight deficit against the kids who had gone to the musical theater schools and like had more of the infrastructure to know how to go about it. But I knew enough about the business like to know where my gaps were. And so I just did the like open call thing. Like I just like non-ec would go to any open call I could go to, and put my name on the like equity non-ec list on the equity calls or whatever. And this was like right before, you know, everything was still done in person. Like none of it was digital yet. There were no tape submissions for anything. Like, and I
for better or worse, probably
for better and for worse. Yeah. And I just got really, really lucky. Like basically I auditioned for a few different things for the Telsey office. And eventually then they started calling me in directly for other things. And like, I was in the files, and it just basically that's how it happened. It was really lucky, and a few people, I think, just being kind and like holding out a hand, but you know, to say like, okay, come this way. This is how it works. So lucky. So, so lucky.
You mentioned, you know, going to Yale, getting into the arts and everything. I want to go back to the beginning. We call it the Ring of Keys moment. It's where you realize that this was the life you wanted to pursue, a life in the arts, whether it be musical or play, acting, directing, whatever. Do you feel like you had that moment at some point in your youth, or maybe a little bit later?
Well, I mean, I love this question. I was reflecting on it before we started today. And I don't know that there was one event in my life where I said, this is what I want to make my life be about. But from a very early age, I was interested in theater, super, super young. And it took a while, even in my adult life, to like roll back the tape and go, wait a second, what was my initial, like, what was I drawn to about this? What are the things that I love in like at my deepest sort of like earliest memories kind of level. And I don't think they were actually about performing. I have this funny relationship to performing. I'm so happy to be doing it right now. I'm loving this part that I get to play, and I get to be in this cast with these other great actors. But I've had other times in my life in the past handful of years where I've thought, I don't know that I like performing at all. And I've sort of been evaluating like whether it's even acting that is the piece that I love the most about working in the theater. And it wasn't when I first became interested in theater. It wasn't that I saw people doing it on stage and I thought, I have to get up on stage and do it. But it was like, I want to see more. I want to be in theaters and I want to read books and understand how it works. I want to like listen to recordings and understand how these shows work. So one of those kinds of moments for me where I understood that like, this was my fascination and I wanted to get to know how it worked was I saw like a community theater production of Into the Woods as a kid. And it was one of those like school performances where they only do act one. And I might've been like 8. And I remember just absolutely not getting it and strongly disliking it. And I was already really interested in theater at that point. Like I loved theater. And I remember thinking, this show, no good. And I remember
because as you're setting this up, you're like Into the Woods. I'm like, we've heard like, Into the Woods is this answer so many times. This is a classic answer. I love this answer.
I'm like, the way I knew I loved theater is by hating Into the Woods. No. There's like a part two, which is that then like a year later, I got the VHS tape of the Into the Woods, like great performances recording out of the library, I think. Like I borrowed it from the library and I watched it. So I think I was like 9, maybe 10 years old. And I watched it and something else clicked in that year since I had seen it the first time. And I just started watching it over and over again and becoming like expert in this show, like knowing it front to back, every note, every word. And on some subconscious level, it was this like recognition that like my taste had matured and that like I now got it. Like I didn't get it last year when I was only 9. Now I get it. And like, I see what makes this so move, so smart, so exciting, so emotional. And it was like, I think it was just one of the early moments of like refining my taste as an artist and as a theater person, as an audience member. And I, you know, like becoming serious about it and thinking like,
sure,
now I'm serious, you know? So
of course,
I think it's that kind of thing. Like I had other things like that where I experiences that honed my taste and my like love of the art form, and which is related to but separate from the love of doing it as a performer, you know.
I think that's really unique, and also I think it speaks to the fact that you even mentioned performing might not be like the end all be all for you. I know that you have a lot of directing experiences. You are a Yalie, so you have a lot of intellect in you as well.
thank you.
Yes, you contain multitudes, as they like to say. I think that's really cool, and definitely a very, I've never heard a Ring of Keys moment like that before.
So you've become now a master of Into the Woods, you know, you're like the expert. How did the rest of your youth go in terms of immersing yourself in your artistic interests?
I mean, again, like I was super super like interested in theater even before that, and I remember as a kid, like there were other kids who were into theater, definitely. But I always felt like the way in which I engaged with theater was slightly different and felt kind of private, in that I really wanted to read, like I wanted to know about theater history and Broadway history. I wanted to like listen to cast albums and stuff. And so there was a little bit of like sharing, like, oh, I love this show. And then a friend in school was like, I love that show too. And we could sing the songs together.
Yeah.
But it was more that like, I amassed like a knowledge and a library of my own of books about theater. I was really interested in theater design, both like the architecture of theater spaces and set design. So it just was like, you know, kids have their like fixations, and mine was all things theater from a very early age. And I like listened to a lot of cast albums, and I remember listening to some cast albums and like kind of, I would design sets, or I would like do stage my own version, like using, you know, toys and stuffed animals, and like try and picture like what I thought the show should look like. And then eventually,
that's so cute.
I know, that's so adorable. Funny. I always think it's so funny because it's like, you know, a kid gets introduced to a certain thing, a certain area of interest, but no one has to like foster that for them. I mean, hopefully you do, yeah. like you encourage it, but no one had to tell me what made theater interesting and like kind of bring that about for me. It just like happened. And it's like some kids are obsessed with trains.
Yeah. And what did your parents think?
I think they just thought it was really adorable, probably. They were very supportive. They've always been really supportive. You know, they took me to the theater. Like when I was a little kid, they would take me to the theater. My parents like to go to the opera, and I remember them taking me to the ballet and things like that in town. But at a certain age, again, like maybe 10 years old, I wanted to see more theater than they had the appetite for. And they would drop me off at the theater. I would buy a ticket with my own allowance, and they would give me 2 quarters for the payphone so that I could call them when the show was over and they would come pick me up again.
Oh my God.
So yeah, they super nurtured it, definitely.
Do you have any siblings?
I have an older brother and an older half-brother. I grew up with my brother, and my half-brother grew up with his mom in another state.
Okay.
And they both have artistic interests, but never that they pursued as intensely as me. And no one else. There's a lot of like love of music all around my family and like appreciation of the arts, but really very little people who, you know, like people, family members who became artists or made that their thing.
Yeah. Interesting. It sounds like the artistic environment was like such a part of your growing up and your identity. When you came into your own identity in general in Tennessee, what was that like? Just becoming the person you are today?
Well, a huge piece of that is that I went to this amazing K-12 school, this like very cool little independent school that I loved and felt very nurtured in, very cared for, very seen and affirmed. There was a lot of art and really just a special place. So that was like really lucky that if I had been in a different kind of environment, and I don't know what that might have been like for me, but it was a very open, very liberal, very affirming place with great teachers and a lot of focus on the arts. So that was a big piece of it. And my parents are both teachers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it all sort of was of a piece. Even my interest in theater, I think they knew how to meet me on that page because they are educators and intellects, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Okay, wait, so I almost asked this earlier when we were talking about like the relationship that you had started to form with Telsey and everything. Was that how Waitress then happened? Like, did they cast that or?
My God, yeah. I mean, that office and has been really nice to me because during Peter Pan, they helped me. It's one of the casting directors who had cast Peter Pan. She helped me get a first agent connection. And right after Peter Pan ended, the audition for Pippin happened. And that was also the Telsey office. And when I came back from Pippin, that same casting director was then casting Waitress. So yeah, super just nice, you know, people looking out for, I mean, I always think about this kind of thing. It's like so many of us like come to New York wanting to work in theater, totally clueless. And it takes, even you said this before when we were talking before we started recording, like it takes someone on the other side of that wall, whatever the wall is, saying, oh, well, by the way, here's how you can walk over the wall. Like, let me just show you where the steps are. Like, and it's definitely, there were so many people who have done that for me at different points. And yeah.
And mine was Kyle Nesbitt.
Hey, shout out to Kyle Nesbitt.
Kyle loves the pod. Shout out to Kyle. He wants to come on. Waitress is one of my favorite musicals, especially of the last like decade. I just think it's so beautiful. I cried every time I went.
Yeah.
Were you in the original company on Broadway or were you in it before it came? Was it in Boston or where did it play?
Yeah, they did it. They did a first production at ART.
ART, okay.
And then pretty soon after, within a few months, they started rehearsing for Broadway. So I didn't do it at ART. One other cast member and I were the last two additions, two swings at the very last minute before Broadway rehearsal started.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. Great.
Yeah.
Wow. How long were you in the Broadway production?
When we opened in like March, April of 2016, I did about a year and a half as a swing. So I covered 6 parts, 3 ensemble guys, 3 roles in that show and went on a bunch and got to do it all a ton. Yeah. For about a year and a half before I moved on.
I'm sure we saw you at some point because we saw it a million times.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was there through like a bunch of different Jennas and got to do it with Jesse, got to do it with Betsy Wolf a bunch, got to do it with, yeah, I think that was the era. I was there with Sarah, her first time doing it. And then of course I got to go back and play Pomander for a couple of weeks with Kat McPhee and Stephanie Torrens. And then I got to come back at the very end and when the show was closing the first time around and be in the ensemble. And then the show reopened, like that remounted production after the pandemic. And I got to be in it again, covering Pomander again. So I got to do it with Sarah and Sierra Renee.
Nettles,
amazing. Amazing. Did you see her do it?
No, that was like the period. Like I just did not catch it when it came back.
Well, there's a certain point at which you're like, am I going to see Waitress for the ninth time?
Dude, it was,
well,
I think
Henry,
it was
it's
nine.
Like you've, it's like, you know, I think it was yeah. eight. And then we were tapped out. We were tapped out at show. Yeah. We were like, all right, yeah. Shauna and Jeremy, this is the end. Yes. But yeah. I don't think I went back after the pandemic, but huge Sierra Renee fan.
Yeah,
I mean,
she was amazing.
We're from Ohio, so we used to see her in shows at Baldwin Wallace.
Oh, yeah.
We saw her do Dreamgirls, Rent, Follies. I mean, she was the star. And
cool.
Obviously, she's...
Yeah.
And, you,
star,
and then but... you didn't do Pippin with her, though. She didn't do the tour, right?
No.
It was Sasha Allen when you guys came
to
Cleveland.
Sasha Allen, that's who I did it with. She was unbelievable. I'm such a huge fan.
Oh, yeah, she ate. I don't think we saw you go on, but when I Googled your name and was doing all my research, I know you went on in Cleveland because
yeah.
someone tweeted, like,
my,
happy to see
you. Yeah, my first time on as Pippin was in Cleveland, but I was on in Cleveland a bunch in the ensemble.
Oh, maybe.
Because of someone's injury, or I think... Anyway, I have really fond memories of, we had 2 weeks, I think, in Cleveland on that tour.
Yeah. That's how Playhouse Square rolls.
Yeah.
Listen, but I remember I was had a huge crush on whoever was Lewis in that production.
Oh, I know. He was so cute.
Well,
oh my God.
Yeah. In the tour?
Mustache.
Eric Altman?
In the tour.
Or Callan Bergman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Eric Altman.
Eric Altman.
I followed, definitely followed on Twitter for years and years.
So dreamy. So dreamy.
Mm-hmm. I love that show so much.
Not to jump from Waitress to Pippin, but how long were you on the road with Pippin?
About 9 months, I think. Pippin was funny. It came up so quickly. Think about this a lot, where like a life in the arts, especially as an actor, where actors are often the last to know anything and the last to get the job and the last to, you know, be included in the conversation. And so sometimes like a job comes in all of a sudden and it like re-roots your whole life and you have to just like put everything aside and make it happen. And Pippin was that for me, where like I auditioned on a Wednesday, the callback was on a Friday. On the Saturday, they said, how soon can you get here? And it was right before Christmas. So I said, well, New Year's Day. And they said, that's not soon enough to think again and come back to us with another answer. So it was like, I had just moved to New York. I had just moved into a new apartment the same week that I auditioned for Pippin. And all of a sudden I was packing my bags and leaving for what might be a year. And I think I dealt with it by saying, I only have to, like, I can leave when I need to leave. Like, I only have to do as long as I want to do. I think I was just so excited to be in New York, and I felt like I was finally kind of starting. And obviously, getting to go do a national tour is part of that starting. It's, like, enormous. But I don't deal with, like, a last-minute change of plans very well. So I did 9 months, which was my...
Me either.
I don't either.
When's your birthday? What's your sign?
October 23rd. I'm a Libra Scorpio cusp.
Okay, very cool. Whatever that means. I'm like, yeah, I'm assuming you're the same kind as
right,
me.
Right.
Anyways, okay, so wait, and then you toured again with Bright Star. Did you get to work with Carmen Cusack on that?
I got to watch Carmen do it like 20 times. When she was leaving, which was when this cast change happened. So I started with a new Alice, my friend Audrey Cardwell, and my friend Leanna Hunt, my friend Mary Page Dance. We were all starting in this cast change. So when we learned the show, we were watching Carmen do it every night, and she's unbelievable.
She's so great. Wait, I didn't know Leanna Hunt was in it.
Yes, we played lovers, if you can call them that. They were so chaste, but yeah.
Yeah.
She did our show, and I don't know if we ever talked about
Bright
Star.
I don't know if we got to Bright Star, but I think, actually, you know what we did, because we talked about the amazing moment in Asheville when like the choreography like reverses and everything.
Yeah. They have this amazing story about that number. Have you heard that story? That like
I don't know.
Apparently, I'm like, this is going to be so third hand, and it's like probably like not accurate to what really happened. But Josh Rhodes, that choreographer, amazing director choreographer, apparently like the number hadn't been working either in this out of town tryout or like in early Broadway previews or something. And they almost cut the number because it was just like not getting a response. And people just like, for whatever reason, the audience just wasn't loving it. And the story is that someone at some point said, it's not the number. We just have to restructure how it works on stage. Like, let me take a crack at it. And then he built this beautiful rewindy sort of fantasy thing. And like, yeah, it's one of the moments that people remember the most about that show.
Yes. Oh my God. That 100%. Gives me chills because I cannot imagine the show without Nashville. Yeah. That's incredible.
I want to talk to you about your directing, because when I was reading your bio, I saw your face light up a little bit when I mentioned it. And I know you've gotten to work with Michael Arden. You've gotten to work with Jeff Calhoun, who's one of the rare, like, true directors we've had on our show.
Cool,
we need to have more.
Yeah.
But when did you first get a taste of the directing world?
I directed a play in high school, and I directed a couple plays in college. And so I think it was always on my mind.
What was the play in high school?
Oh, The Book of Liz by David and Amy Sedaris.
Oh my gosh.
It's this funny, really wacky, very Sedaris-y, you know, comedy. I think I always had it in mind. I mean, you know, like I was just describing what I was like essentially directing shows as a kid, like listening to my Walkman and the cassette tape of Annie. I sound like I was born in 1971.
I was just like payphones.
It all sounds so nostalgic.
I think I'm like generationally Brinksy in that way, where like I like fetishize the like pre-internet era. So I think it was always on my mind, and I, for whatever reason, acting and performing just made itself available as a path more apparently than other ways of working in theater. You know, it's like the school show happens and it's like, do you want to audition and be in the school musical? Right. And it's kind of yes or no. I mean, and then maybe in some schools, like, or with some great teachers, it might be like, well, here's what stage management is and here's what it means to work crew backstage or something. But for a lot of just kids really only see the option of being in the show. And I was in the shows and I did well, and people told me I was good. And, you know, like, you want to keep doing the thing that you're getting positive feedback for. So
of course,
I think that eventually I just was sort of down the path of being a performer. And even in college, there were a couple different times where I wanted to direct something, but not at the expense of getting to perform something else that was like going to happen that year. And even in my early, like, I remember joking during Waitress to cast members that this was my swan song, my final performance as an actor. Like, I always like sort of had it in mind that there were other things that I wanted to do as a theater maker. And eventually that just became asking any director that I had a connection to, can I sit in and watch your process? Can I like be a guest in a rehearsal room one day? Can I be an assistant on this reading you're doing, unpaid, unofficially? Just to start to sort of like say to myself and say to the world, hi, I'm also a director, an assistant director, and start to have some things I could put on a resume that would tell other people that that's what I did. And so just slowly rolling the ball that way, and then eventually became some paid jobs as an assistant associate director and some small projects of my own as a director. And I still feel like I'm just rolling the ball, like letting that thing snowball. But it is, I mean, I had these great experiences assisting Michael Arden on a handful of projects, and I hope to work with him again. I'm a really big fan, and we're good friends.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Yeah, oh my God, I love what he makes. I really love getting to do that. You know, I mean, my interest in theater has always been macro. Like I was obsessed with set design, and it can be hard for me as a performer to like let go of wanting to have opinions about how everything is made and how the moments work. And well, what if it, and why is the design, and shouldn't the lights? And I really love that part as an assistant director, associate director, obviously, as well as my own projects that are just mine to call, but to get to have an opinion on everything and get to say, if I may, like, it just feels like that could move a little more swiftly. That kind of thing. I love getting to, I mean, I think a lot of people who are big theater fans hone those kinds of opinions about how things work or are not working. And I love getting to apply that in the making process.
Yeah. Oh, sort of on cool. that note, what's been the experience like being in a show with Rebecca Frecknall and directing it? I mean, I think she's such a visionary. My God,
she's brilliant. I'm almost intimidated because of how much I like her and respect her brain and what she's made. She was really generous with us. Like when we started these rehearsals, they were very open about like, they were not just remounting something they had made before. First of all, they were like totally like retooling a lot of different moments. I mean, you saw it in London, so you can probably speak to some of that. reorienting some of how it works. Obviously, it lives in that space very differently on Broadway than it does in London. They're very different buildings, I think, and probably the feel, the scale is very different. Then with these scenes and with the actors, you know, for each of these scenes, she said, okay, let's get on our feet and let's see what feels right. And it was not at all, which it often is, and rightly so. This is how the blocking works in the scene. We've worked it out. We've done this show for 2 years. We've like, so it actually, you need to stand here. There were a few things like that that were technical where it's like, you need to stand here for this thing for a sight line. But otherwise it was really, really collaborative and very open. And she's just very, very smart. She's also very like smart in the way that she was hands off. Like there were lots of things that she didn't interfere with. And at a certain point, there were days where I thought, is it okay? And I had to like trust that like, yeah, if she wasn't saying anything, it was fine. And then she would come in with something like very specific and very helpful and say, actually, here's how to tweak this moment and address something. Yeah. Anyway, I really love what she's made. I love the concept that she has for this production.
Oh, it's so freaking cool. I'm obsessed with it. Yeah. Like, and I have to say, I was gagged for Gail. I only knew her from Glow. Which she was great in. But mm-hmm. oh my God, I mm-hmm. was blown away. One of my favorite performances this season, for sure. Like she's fantastic.
I think she's so brilliant. I mean, from the very early rehearsals, I was just like staring slack-jawed at her. She's so live, like she's such a live wire and she's so funny. She's a great comedian and she's really like emotionally raw and open. And I just think what she's built is really smart and really like you cannot help but love and fall in love with that person and worry about her at the same time. It's like a really virtuosic, cool performance in a bitch of a part that like, obviously it's like a really heavy lift that she does so much emotionally, vocally and everything. But also there's so much baggage about who Sally Bowles is in the culture because of amazing actresses who have put their stamp on it. And because a lot of people have their own very personal relationship to cabaret because of productions they've done or seen. And so I can't imagine like I mean, she was very forthcoming about being scared. She was very like open about that was scary, but I think she just bodies it every night. And we often are watching together like on monitors backstage when she sings cabaret or other moments. Just like all of us, smitten and in awe of her.
Totally. We've had Atu on the show a few times. He's been on Drama twice and we saw him after cabaret and I was like, you literally sit on stage during her two intense moments. Like, how are you not just like in the moment?
Screaming for her. Yeah.
He's like staring into the distance. Like, it's really a remarkable thing. And Eddie, I mean, I think this production is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree.
Before we get to our closing segment, Dose of Drama, I'm just curious, you know, hopefully you're in cabaret forever and you stay employed for, you know, years and years to come for as long as you want to be in it. But do you feel like directing is what you'd like to do after this? Are you joking backstage at cabaret? This is my final hurrah.
Yeah, totally. It's like an insurance policy. Cause if you say it's your final job, then anything after that is bonus.
It's true.
Yeah, totally. I absolutely look forward to doing more directing and working alongside other directors. I love watching directors work. I mean, it's something that I loved about this process with Rebecca Precknell is that like, I really admire directors like that for whatever reason. And I think, again, from an early age, whether I knew that that's what I was fixating on or not, I like the conversation about the why. I like talking ideas and concepts and crafting moments and toggling and troubleshooting how to make things land the way that they should. So I love watching other directors whose work I really admire do that. So I look forward to doing more of that. And who knows? I mean, I do think something that's been really amazing about getting to do this role is that like, this is for all of us, like any of our artistic experiences, however disparate they feel, are actually a part of the same quilt of our refining our sense of our art and what we like, what we care about, what we make. And so I get to have this amazing experience on stage, being a part of theater making from this side again, and it had been a couple of years since I had done it, and it feeds all of my artistic sensibility. So we'll see. It's also just, it's a weird unpredictable life. Yeah. Like, so I think I'm trying to not hold on too tightly to any idea of what it might be. And I'm just glad for the structure and the reliability of work for this year, and leave it at that for now.
Love it. Yes. Well, everyone needs to check out Cabaret. I know that there's like a lottery that everyone can try and do, because I know tickets are all over the map.
They are brutally expensive.
My hack has been, and I've been saying this on the pod, just walk up to the box office and ask them what they've got, because they might sell a partial view that's really not that partial view seat for, you know, still not like under $50, but you never know. It could be the way to do it. They just don't sell those online for the reasons being. So save up, do it. It is so worth it for this production. Now, we do end on a dose of drama. This is sort of something to leave the listeners with, whether it be something that's on your mind, your heart, as we like to say. I will start. My dose of drama is, I know that I've been a tortured poet of late, but I cannot stop listening to the Notebook cast album. And I, you know, my life is drama and theater and Broadway. The reason I say that is, I don't listen to show tunes nonstop all the time, every day.
Oh, you know? Girl, I never
but
do.
This album. Yeah, I know.
People are like, are you sure you like theater?
This album is... Yeah, you don't have to... It doesn't have to live and breathe every single second of your day, but this album has been taking up a lot of my playing time on Spotify. It is so gorgeous. Ingrid Michaelson wrote the most beautiful score. It's the first time since Sarah Bareilles that I feel like a singer-songwriter wrote an album for Broadway that I really feel tugs on the heartstrings and is able to tell a story in a really special way. And I hope that she has more in her down the road.
Wow. Ryan Vasquez, fandom, hive, rise up, as they say. Yes. I'm such a big fan. He's a friend, but primarily I'm a fan.
I'm sure it's mutual. He is amazing. Yeah.
Love him.
Oh my God, I love him too.
Okay, my dose of drama. I'm so random. I started watching the original American Queer as Folk this weekend. Have never seen it. Have either of you ever watched it?
Never.
Not since I was like in high school and it was transgressive and I, you know, watched a few episodes with a lesbian friend.
Yeah. Right.
That's right. Is it a very lesbian focused?
There are core lesbian characters in it. It's focused on the gay men in it. But it just felt like one of those pieces of culture that I never consumed ever. But, you know, watching the first half of the first season, I'm like, oh, I've seen all of these on like various websites or, you know, Twitter and stuff. Like the sex scenes are pretty amazing. Like honestly, for scripted television, like the stuff they were doing in like the year 2000 was kind of wild.
What network was it on?
It was on Showtime.
Oh, so it was allowed to be sexy then.
It was allowed to be, but it's kind of good in like a bad way. But I was looking for a show that was, you know, 22 episodes long, not like a mini series, it's 8 episodes and came out in one day kind of thing. I was looking for a week to week where the writing can change with the audience reception, et cetera. And I think that'll serve that purpose for a little while. So
fun.
It's fun. It's actually like feels low stakes to me so far. But anyway, Henry, do you have a dose of drama to end this episode of Drama?
This is sort of like apropos of nothing, but it just came to my mind this morning. I want to shout out Elise Allen Lewis. Did you guys see Teeth?
Yes.
Oh my God. So I guess they just finished their run, but Elise is my favorite actor working in theater today. I texted two different friends who know her, and I know her a little bit, like well enough to message her and tell her how much I loved her performance. But I texted two friends of mine who know her after the show saying exactly that. Like she's American theater's greatest treasure. And I just think she's so brilliant. She's so funny. What she does is so unique and like nuanced and somehow broad and subtle at the same time. And I felt that way seeing her in Soft Power and like Girl in Danger, and she's just brilliant. So,
oh my God,
she should be president.
Yeah. she was the lead, right, of Teeth, the female lead.
Yeah,
she's amazing and a beast of a role too.
Yeah, totally.
Oh my God,
what a nutty, amazing show, right?
I loved it.
They teased on Twitter that like the end is not. This isn't the end of Teeth. So I don't know what that means, whether it be an album or another run or I don't know.
Oh, I think they made an album. Okay. Maybe that's not public knowledge or whatever. But no, I'm with you, Henry. She's amazing. I love that show.
Yeah, she is brilliant. I was at 54 Below forever. Her and her husband, Eric William Morris, were very much part of the fabric of a lot of the Joe Iconis stuff that was happening. So I've seen her talent for years, and I'm sad I missed her in Teeth because I do think she's brilliant.
Yeah, she really is.
Just like you, Henry, you are so amazing. And getting to know the man behind the blonde Nazi on stage has been really amazing. You are so wonderful and authentic and extremely intelligent. And I really love that we were able to get some of your insights and everything today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for complimenting my accent work in the show. You have no idea how much that means to me. I really labored over it. I really, you know, there was a lot of thought and a lot of anxiety. So thank you. It's the nicest thing you could say.
Of course.
It's so nice to meet you guys. This was so fun.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad. And everyone should follow you. You're at Henry B. Gott with two T's on Instagram.
That's
just
it.
Just on IG.
That's it.
Perfect. While everyone's following Henry and his beautiful life, they should follow us. We're at The Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I'm at Dylan McDowell. Thank you again, Henry. Everyone needs to go see Cabaret. And Connor, I will see you next time. Drama.
Bye, y'all.